This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. I'm not actually driving home today. It is Thursday. It is episode 102. In a couple of weeks, we'll be doing episode 104, which will be the two-week boundary. I have started to talk to my son-in-law about doing a ride-along with me like he did last year, because that was fun. Today, I'm doing something a little bit different because my buddy, whom I have started to get together with on Thursday evenings, he needed to delay a little bit, and so we're getting together at 5:30 as opposed to 5. That gives me an extra half hour. And so I was thinking, well, I have some other things to do at home. Maybe I'll just go ahead and record a podcast driving between headquarters and the restaurant. Now, that's only 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes, so 10 minutes. So I thought I would take the scenic route. we would just kind of pad out the time a little bit. It's been a good week. Got a lot of things accomplished this week. I am really getting close. I'm getting close on getting my Windows mobile phone application done and getting that launched and seeing if we can get some people to actually download it, because then maybe I'll have a place where I can do a little advertising. Already have an idea for the next app to do, and have an idea for the next app after that. The fact of the matter is, digital products are just a ton easier to do than physical products. And so we'll see. We're still selling a few stands here and there, and it's puttering along, but it's certainly not going to make me any big money anytime soon. Which, you know, it was a really, really good experience, but at this point I am analyzing and looking at it and saying, okay, one of the big weaknesses of the human mind is we don't tend to walk away soon enough sometimes for things. We keep throwing money at stuff when it would be really better if we just said, okay, that's it. So I'm analyzing and looking at all of that. But, you know, it's definitely not over yet. We're just puttering along. But everything there is going well. It really is. I've had some nice conversations this week with friends. And expect to have more nice conversations before the week is out. So that's my definition of a good week. I came across an article this past week in the Huffington Post. And the title was written to be provocative. And I took the bait and thought, well, okay, let's go see what they have to say. The title of the article was "Why Evangelicals Hate Jesus." I thought, well, let's just see what this guy has to say. And he was citing research. I'm actually going to be half reading, half quoting from the article, and the only reason that I can do that is because I'm actually on some little side streets and I'm not going very fast, in case you were concerned. He was citing some research from a poll published by the Pew Forum on religion and public life. And he was claiming that it revealed what social scientists have known for a long time. And that is that white evangelical Christians, as a group, are least likely to support politicians or policies that reflect the actual teachings of Jesus. Now then, there is some truth in that statement. There's no question about that. But I will have some caveats to this along the way. Nonetheless, I think this is a really good thing to have a small discussion about and to review, because there are some important things to keep in mind about this. So anyways, as examples of the fact that white evangelical Christians are not likely to support politicians who actually are trying to implement the teachings of Jesus, he gave the following examples. For instance, Jesus unambiguously preached mercy and kindness, and that is true. There's no question about that. And the article mentions that these are supposed to be the cardinal values, virtues of the Christian faith. No question about that. And yet, he says, evangelicals are the most supportive of the death penalty, draconian sentencing, punitive punishment, and over-rehabilitation, and the government use of torture. So he's saying, on one hand, Jesus said that we should be merciful and that we should forgive, and yet we as evangelical Christians, we love the death sentence and we love harsh sentencing, etc., etc. He also says Jesus exhorted people to be loving and kind and peaceful and nonviolent, and yet evangelicals are the group most supportive of easy access to weaponry, little or no regulation of handguns and semi-automatic gun ownership, not to mention the violent military invasion of various countries around the world. Well, you know, there's some truth to that as well. Now, just because you want to protect gun ownership doesn't necessarily make you violent. Because my buddy that I went out with Tuesday night is an avid hunter, and he's a good hunter, and I don't see how a proclamation to be peaceful necessarily is in conflict with hunting. But it is true that oftentimes we end up supporting or voicing our support for war, voicing our support for invasion, when in fact Jesus did very much teach a gospel of peace. And if you look at the Sermon on the Mount, there's pretty much no question about how Jesus suggested, actually commanded, us to deal with aggressors. And that is, if someone strikes you on one cheek, you turn the other cheek. If someone demands your coat, you give him your cloak also. It's very interesting. In addition to these points, the writer of the article also brought out the fact that Jesus, according to him, this one I'm not so sure about. He says Jesus was very clear that the pursuit of wealth was inimical to the kingdom of God, that the rich are to be condemned, and that a follower of him means to give one's money to the poor. And yet evangelicals are the most supportive of corporate greed and capitalist excess, and they are the most opposed to institutional help for the nation's poor, especially poor children. Well, okay. First of all, evangelicals also, if you will look at the figures, are those who give the most to missions work and who do support many causes which directly impact the poor and help the poor. So I think just to say blanket that evangelicals don't believe in giving money to the poor, that's not really true. I think what evangelicals are opposed to is the government taking their money and then redistributing it to whomever the government thinks should get it. And I think evangelicals would be opposed to some of the people that the government is redistributing the money to. Now, that does not necessarily mean that I agree with all of this haranguing that we go through in evangelical circles about government and big government and shaking our fist at all those things, because I don't really agree with all of that. I am extremely grateful for this country. And my philosophy when it comes to taxes is very simply, whatever the government wants, I'm just going to give it to them. And if somebody comes along and votes through a tax cut, hey, great. But if they don't, you know what? This is the greatest country in the world. I'm going to give them their taxes. Whatever, because Jesus said, render unto Caesar whatever is Caesar's, and unto God whatever is God's. So, you know, fine. If I have a chance to vote over whether or not I want to pay more taxes or less taxes, I will vote to pay less taxes. Certainly, I will do that. But I will take advantage of my opportunity to vote, and that will be that. However it comes out, and I'm not going to spend my days haranguing about the fact that I think the government should take less of my money. I'm not going to do that, because I have other things to spend my energy on. So, anyways, it is true that evangelicals have been those who have been non-supportive of governmental programs to help the poor. That is true. And it is also true, as the article goes on to say, that the stance of evangelicals opposed to such things is not new. That is true. I am old enough that I can recall quite clearly times in the past when the only thing that we felt like we should spend missions money on was getting people saved. That we were not going to put up feeding programs, and we were not going to clothe the poor, and that's kind of because that was the social gospel. And I do recall that there was that attitude earlier in my life. Thankfully, we've gotten past that, and we've realized that people are people, and God's kindness and His generosity extends to them, whether or not they happen to agree with our beliefs or not. So thankfully, there has, at least in some quarters, we've moved away from this idea that the social gospel is anathema. And I'd like to actually see us move farther away from that idea. But it is a very, very interesting article. And the conclusion that the author of the article comes to is that the reason there is this disconnect between what evangelical Christians say they believe and what they support in terms of their political views is because we tend to reinterpret everything in our life to our own benefit, and that's absolutely true. Now, he does go on and mention, you know, evangelicals really don't hate Jesus. You know, he admits that he just did that as a title just to be provocative, he and his co-author. Which, of course, it was, which I read the article because of it. So, you know, it worked. And he does go on this little extended tirade about the fact that evangelicals love Jesus because Jesus is going to bail them out from, you know, the hell that is coming and, you know, save their souls and that kind of stuff. So they really can't hate Jesus because of all of those things. But they just don't want to follow what he says they should do. And there is some truth in that. Definitely. And it is definitely true that we take the teachings of Jesus and we retranslate them continuously for how we think it'll work out best for us. And this really is something that as individuals we should be aware of and be wary of, that when we are sure that the gospel of Jesus Christ proclaims X or encourages us to do Y, we should really, really examine that and say, wait a minute, is that really true? And I personally have done a lot of soul searching over the last several months along these lines, specifically with regards to the core functioning of my life. I've had a lot of conversations with friends about money and the role of money and about life and what Christ called us to. And I think I mentioned last week that one of those interesting questions that hit my brain was, when did Jesus ever talk about work? You know, Jesus told us some critically important things about life in his teachings to us, but when did he ever talk to us about work? And the only example that anyone has been able to give me is that, well, he did say, pray ye that the Lord of the harvest will send more workers into the field. But you go through the entire Sermon on the Mount, which for us is Jesus' treatise about how to live life, and there's not one mention of work in there. And in fact, in Jesus, you see him walking around and finding those who would be with him and him telling them, put down your work and just come follow me around and learn of me. Now, people would say, but he told them that he would give them a new kind of work. But the kind of work that Jesus gave them in the way he showed them to do it, we wouldn't consider it to be work because they're just walking around talking to people. So I've really been thinking about this a lot over the last several weeks. And I've been discussing it with friends. I've been discussing the idea of the vagabond lifestyle. And is that really what Jesus calls us to? To just walk and talk to people about him, about the kingdom. And a buddy of mine quite rightly said, you know, it all comes back to that third pivot, and he's using my terminology there, the idea that we as individuals would be intimately acquainted with the supernatural on a daily basis. We could heal people. We could take 5 loaves and 2 fishes and feed 5,000. We could walk on the water. We could go fishing and pull the fish out and then open its mouth and take out a coin and pay our taxes. All that stuff that we see Jesus doing. He said, you know, if you had that, it would change the equation. And it would change the equation. And it maybe would bring us closer to the lifestyle that Jesus had called us to. But in many cases, we have walked away from the supernatural and have found solutions other places. In light of all that, it gets interesting for me to then evaluate some things that it would be easy to dismiss. One of them was, there was a 7-page article on the CNN website about a new group now that is proclaiming the end of the world. Supposedly May 21st, which is a scant 10 episodes away. May 21st, Jesus is supposedly coming back to judge the world. And there's a whole group of people that have decided. They've gotten their RVs, and they've gotten their big vinyl stickers for the outside of their RVs, and they're traveling around in the caravan and just stopping and telling people that the end of the world is coming and they need to repent and the kingdom of God is at hand and all those kind of things. And it would be easy, in one sense, just to dismiss these people as crackpots. Not that I wouldn't be thrilled for Jesus to come on May the 21st. That would be really cool. I don't suspect that he would. And yet, on the other side of the equation, these people may be closer to the kind of lifestyle that Jesus had actually called us to in the gospel than the ones that most of us are living, which is kind of an interesting thought. And the other place that I had a little interference this week between my belief system of what Jesus taught, and I'm pulling into the restaurant, and it's a tight turn, which is the reason my wheels are squealing. It's not that I'm doing 40 miles an hour around a corner. The other interesting collision that I had this week between belief systems, between what Jesus taught in terms of kindness and generosity, and between what I am quick to observe as, you know, more my own evangelical Christian attitudes, happened at Walmart. And I just got tickled at myself this week, because I was in line at Walmart, and there was a man in front of me. He probably was my age, although he had lived a much harder life than I. You could tell it in the way he held himself and in his face. And he was not tipsy, but he certainly had the demeanor of someone who had either spent quite a bit of time with alcohol or drugs or both. And he was fishing through his wallet, trying to find a card to pay for his purchases, which I didn't know what they were at the time. And he was hunting and hunting, couldn't find it, and he was saying, oh, it's my school card, and I don't know where it is, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there came a point where the cashier said, well, if you just, she said, I can just set this stuff aside if you'd just like to search for it, and then I can move some of these other people through the line, and then if you find it, it'll be fine. And I was looking at this situation, and I thought, you know, out of kindness and generosity, you could probably just see, probably doesn't have that much. And then she had said, well, it, you know, it'll be like $13 and, I don't know, 85 cents or something. And I thought, oh, this is ridiculous. So I had my card in my hand, and he said, okay, well, I don't know where my stuff is. And I leaned forward, and I touched him on the shoulder. I said, look, wait, wait, wait. And in the process of me saying, okay, look, look, wait, 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 I finally got far enough forward in the line that my head rotated and I saw what he was buying. And he was buying like a 2 liter of vodka and a 2 liter of orange soda. I mean, he wasn't even buying the orange juice to make the screwdriver with. He was buying a cheap orange soda that had high fructose corn syrup in it. And frankly, I have to say, I might have been a bit more offended about the fact that I might be purchasing something with high fructose corn syrup in it than I was about buying somebody vodka. And I just came up short. I just looked at it and went into gridlock for a minute. And I was trying to think, what do I do now? Do I buy this guy his vodka and orange soda? Because I hadn't gotten out of my mouth. I hadn't actually said, let me just pay for that. Thankfully, at that moment, apparently I had jarred him away from his confusion, that he looked at me, probably saw the confusion on my face, wondering why I paused, and in that moment of distraction, he then went, oh, wait, it's in my pocket. And I smiled, because I was sure the cashier had no idea what was going on in my head. And he pulled out his card and he paid for it. And we had a nice little quick exchange. And at one point he said, you look familiar. Do I know you? And I introduced myself and he introduced himself. And we didn't appear to know each other, and I gave him a kind greeting, and we went on our way. And since then, I have pondered that. I have pondered it. What would have been the better thing to do? I'm certain that the better thing to do would not have been to go, oh, well, look, If you're buying vodka, forget that. I'm not buying that. That stuff is going to rot your gut. I'm not going to say that to an individual. Out of kindness and generosity, out of mercy, I'm not going to say that to a person. The Lord very kindly allowed me to back out of it without actually having paid for his vodka. But I am of the opinion that the act of kindness, of helping out someone in need, trumps the fact that he's buying vodka and cheap orange soda. I think that's my opinion. It's my opinion at the moment. Because the act of kindness is more important, for one thing. And for another thing, it's free will. It's not like I went and found the vodka and the soda, bought them, and gave them to somebody that I knew who was an alcoholic. He had already made the decision. He was already purchasing. He was already going to do that. And my contribution would have simply been, as a human being to another human being, showing someone kindness. But I gotta tell you, I'm not really sure that that's the right answer. So, you know, we all go along in life. We try to get wiser as we're going along. The whole point of this entire discussion is just to give you some food for thought and to encourage you to take a little time to reflect on what you support politically, on how you approach where your money goes, to just give a little thought and maybe see if some of the things that you hold as principles are not really supported by those things that you hold as beliefs. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it to the restaurant. Until next week.